Welcome to Parents Perspective. I'm sorry, sweetie. Brenda's dad shook his head. If you've run out of money, then you just don't have it for the movies. 15-year-old Brenda rolled her eyes. Dad, it's not as if I won't pay you back. It's only for a week.
Brenda, her dad began, you know the rules. Your money is yours to budget. That means you have to make it last from one pay period to the next. If you run out, you'll have to cut your expenditures for now.
But everyone is going to the movies tomorrow, Brenda wailed. What am I supposed to do?
Just then, her 13-year-old brother walked through the room, his hand on the wallet in his jeans.
Maybe I can help, he looked at his sister sideways. If you pay me back double.
From a parent's perspective, how can we best teach our teens to manage money? I'm Sandy Burt. Linda Perlis could not be with us today. She'll return soon. Our guest today is that rare true expert on helping kids manage money. Janet Bodner is editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine. She writes the Money Smart Kids column at www.kiplinger.com and is author of the book Raising Money Smart Kids. She's also the mother of three kids, all grown up, ages 20, 24, and 26. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Janet.
Thanks a lot, Sandy. It's really my pleasure to be here.
What's the biggest challenge, do you think, for teens in managing their money?
Teens are very self-centered. They want to buy everything, spend everything, do everything right now. They don't really have a long-term perspective. And they're always going to come to mom or daddy and ask for things. So I think just getting that self-discipline, as it is with lots of other things in a teenager's life, is really the biggest challenge.
It seems to me we're now finding out that there is actually a piece, this is terrible to say, of an adolescent's brain that's not fully developed. And unfortunately, it's the planning part, among other things.
When I first heard that, I heard it in conjunction with a lecture that was being given on kids and driving and why they would tend to drive when they're drunk or why they would tend to make mistakes in judgment. And I think that was part of it. The person who was giving the lecture was saying they really aren't fully formed. The planning, the idea of consequences isn't really reaching them yet. And I think that certainly financial consequences, I said, oh my God, the light dawned on me because I said, it's the same thing. They'll engage in reckless behavior because they're not really planning ahead, not really thinking about the consequences of their action. It's all just in the now.
Mm-hmm. So what if you could give parents sort of a window into this kind of thinking, we'll call it loosely? How do kids perceive their finances, do you think?
Well, I think one of the things that parents can do to help out is kind of, again, what you were reading in your little anecdote, anything that you can do to help them plan and kind of get them on task, because they're obviously not going to do it themselves. But I think they can learn this behavior, certainly. And if they do have, as in the case that you were mentioning, a pot of money, a stash of money that they have to manage and they have to make decisions about, I think that's very helpful. They don't have to be decisions way in the future, which is perhaps more than they can handle at that particular age, but certainly the next day. You know, if they want to go to the movies the next day, then they ought to be able to handle their money in order to make that decision. If they're getting a weekly allowance or a monthly allowance, certainly teenagers, I think, could handle a monthly allowance. They could do some planning within a short amount of time, a reasonable amount of time. And I think that it's good for the child because the child is learning the skills of making decisions. What do I want to do with my money? How do I want to make it last? Which is, of course, what you want to do. And also, it's good for the parents because from a parent's perspective, you don't have your kids saying to you, well, lend me the money. You know I'll pay you back. You know they won't pay you back because they're going to forget and they're going to count on you to forget. So I think that whatever you can do to help them manage their money, certainly on a short-term basis, is good for them as far as the general idea of planning is concerned, but it's also good from a standpoint of financial management.
Does it make a difference if teenagers have cash?
Oh, yes, definitely, 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 definitely. I've sort of been on this cash stick for a number of years, and I've heard over the past few years, oh, but we live in a plastic society, and don't they need to know how to manage plastic? And I say, eventually, when their brains are well-formed enough to manage this. But as far as kids are concerned, and I include teenagers in this kids category, cash is just really important. And now suddenly cash is sexy. sexy again, right, because of what's going on in right. the economy. Mm-hmm. Cash is real money to kids of all ages, including teenagers. Credit, even checks, you know, that's not real money. Certainly a credit card or a debit card, that's not real money. That's just magic money, magic cards, or a direct line to mom and dad's wallet so that if, you know, they run out of money on their card, mom and dad will top it up, that sort of thing. So it's not real. So I think it's critical for kids, teenagers, to learn how to manage either a cash allowance if they're younger and they don't have their own jobs yet, and so you're trying to make sure they have money to manage, or certainly once they have a job, a part-time job, whether it's a babysitting job or lawn mowing or a summer job or working at a retail store or someplace like that, if they have a bank account where they actually have to deposit their money, take out their money, see it come out of the ATM machine, anything that they can touch and feel, and also feel the big empty in their wallet, you know? I mean, if there's no money, if they're saving money for a particular thing, an iPod or an iPhone or something like that, and then they have to go out and buy it, the money is gone. And I think that's a really important lesson for kids to learn, because obviously, you know this, when you're clicking a mouse online, it's never really gone.
Yeah, right.
It's just really easy to just keep clicking.
Right. Well, you mentioned allowance, and that's a big subject for a lot of parents, and I know that it's different depending on the age of the child. But we're mostly focusing on teens today. But how would you feel about teenagers and allowance?
Allowance to me is really critical, and I would start in an ideal situation, an allowance when kids are 6, 7, 8 years old so that they kind of get the drift here and they know what they're doing. Now, if you haven't started it that early, that's okay. With a teenager, you can always say, look, now that you're a teenager, we're going to be giving you more responsibility with your money, more independence with your money, and that really plays well with teens. So even if they haven't received an allowance until now, it's not too late. But again, I think it's really important to get money into their hands so that they can make decisions with how they're going to spend the money and what choices they're going to make in particular. And if they want to go to the movies with their friends once a week, then they have to make that money last, especially if they're getting a monthly allowance. If the money doesn't last, then gee, they have to figure out some other way to perhaps earn additional money. And again, it may be working at more babysitting jobs or mowing more lawns, or maybe you have extra chores that they can do around the house. You know, they can wash the car or they can clean out the garage or, you know, things like that, certain jobs that you can pay them for in order for them to earn more money. But the whole idea of an allowance, it's a fixed amount of money that kids get at regular intervals, and this is really important, for which or with which they have to make their own decisions on how to spend it. And you give to them certain responsibilities. It's not just, oh, I'm going to give them an allowance on top of everything that I already give them. No, no, no. You switch over to them some of the financial responsibilities that you've been handling. Teenagers should never be asking you for money when they go to the movies with their friends or when they go to the mall if they're going to hang out on a weekend. They should always be doing that with their own money and figuring out how much they've got and how much they want to spend.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teaching teens to manage money.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Janet Bodner of Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine about teaching teens to manage their money. Now, you talked about jobs. Maybe that's another thing we should cover here. What about teens and jobs? How do you feel about that?
Teens and jobs are a good thing. I read a lot that nowadays teens don't always work in the summers anymore because they're doing other things. You know, maybe they're doing school programs or traveling or volunteering, all of which is a good thing. Having some sort of a job where they have responsibility, they have to show up at a certain time, they have to work with other people, maybe they even have to work with the public, which is a real challenge for anybody who's ever done that kind of work. It really is a lesson that I think kids need, and maybe even need it more than the summer program at X college, which I know a lot of parents do nowadays. But just the idea of being in the workforce is just a real eye-opener for kids. Seeing how much they get paid, how much gets taken out in taxes, managing this money, again, putting the money in the bank, withdrawing the money when they need it. All of those are real life lessons as well that I think a lot of kids aren't getting if they don't work. And again, the longer they last on the family dole, right? Because mom and dad are sort of supporting them. So I like the idea of a job. What I would suggest for kids, because they are busy and I know they do have a lot to do, is to start with a summer job and see how the kids are at budgeting their time. Some kids do work during the school year. And actually, the studies have shown that if kids work somewhere between, say, 10 and 12 hours a week during the school year, that's kind of the optimum amount of time. They seem to be able to handle that amount of time. But if they start working longer hours than that, then their schoolwork starts to suffer, which you don't want to happen because that is their number one job. So if they're going to work during the school year, you kind of have to balance it out. So I think a good idea is to just start during the summer months when they don't have a lot of other things on their plates and see how they manage their time. They get the experience of managing money. They have then money to spend, presumably, during the school year so that, again, they're not coming to you. And if they know that they have a trip coming up, a class trip, I think it's perfectly appropriate for you as a parent to say, well, this is not academically related, but, you know, just a fun thing that's coming up during the school year. You can go on the trip, but you're going to have to pay a part of that. You know, we're not going to finance the whole $1,000 or whatever it might cost because that's a little bit steep, especially nowadays, you know, with the economy being what it is. So I think that working over the summer to contribute to their own school year expenses is also a good thing. Then if the kids want to continue during the school year, kind of depends on what kind of student they are, how many hours. And I would never, as a parent, let this decision be on their shoulders. I mean, you don't say, well, it's your job, work where you want, do what you want. You're still the parent. They're still kids, you know. We were talking before about the planning and everything. So you kind of have to intervene here and say, well, how are you going to get to this job? Is it too far away? Do I want you working at 9 o'clock at night? Or what happens if you have an exam the next day? So those kinds of things you need to have them think about or remind them of because they won't necessarily think of them on their own.
And the other piece, I guess, that has to go into this is extracurricular activities,
right. Mm-hmm.
Which some people use them for resume padding, but a lot of kids really mm-hmm. need them for other kinds of personal growth, and it also has to do with social interactions and other things mm-hmm. that are pretty important.
Yes, and I would never say not to do those things. First of all, kids can learn a lot of the same things from extracurricular activities, right? The showing up on time, the working with a group, the getting along with people, the taking responsibility. So there's nothing really wrong with that, and that's why I think sometimes trying to work and do all those other things during the school year is just too much for kids. But having some experience in the workforce is just one of those things that you want your kids to learn along with everything else they learn when they grow up. So I think summers are a good time to do it.
Now, what about the family's finances? There are a lot of different opinions about should teens know what's going on in the family finances? And mm-hmm. if so, what do we tell them?
Even teenagers don't need to know everything about your family finances because that's really private to you. And a lot of parents just feel funny about telling kids this, number one. And also, there's also the factor that they may go blab it to their friends. And, you know, you are entitled to your financial privacy.
And I think probably more often than not, that happens. Kids in some way or other, not necessarily intending to, but mm-hmm. teenagers, if you tell your teen, it's usually not a secret.
No, it isn't, you know. And the thing is, again, they're not fully developed, you know, psychologically, so they can't really put it in perspective. So that no matter how much money you make, whether it's $30,000, $130,000, $330,000 a year, they don't have the sense of how much this really is. It just sounds like a lot to them. And they may not have the sense of this is something that you don't want discussed, you know, or if you do keep it hush-hush, then they get the wrong idea because they think that there's something wrong with this or that you're never supposed to talk about money. And that's another mistake that parents tend to make with their kids. They just often ignore the whole subject. So anyway, I think that you don't really have to share with them chapter and verse, but certainly with teens, they can certainly know more about family finances than middle school kids or certainly than elementary school kids. And one useful exercise that I've actually done with teenagers, and it works, is, and you can do this at the age of 16 or so, they've looked at what their take-home pay is month to month, and shown the kids where it goes, what the bills are, what is the mortgage payment, what's the car payment, how much goes to the utility company, how much goes into savings, how much comes right off the top. That's really not take-home pay, but the point is a certain amount comes off the top and goes into the retirement account at work. That kind of perspective for teenagers is really useful and really eye-opening because it looks like such a huge pot of money. When I did this exercise with teenagers, what they used was we sat at a table. And the parents had play money that represented what their take-home pay was. And then they brought their bills, their real bills, and they kind of parceled it out, you know, pot by pot, paying the credit card bills and everything. And it looked like such a huge pile of money before they started. At the end of the exercise, there was about $500 in money left on the table. And so the kid said, well, is this our money or is this for us? And the mom said, that's for groceries. And she just took the money like a croupier at Las Vegas and just pulled it all in. And they were just flabbergasted that it was all gone. So I thought that was a very useful exercise. And another thing that kids can learn, teenagers certainly, about money is when they're applying to colleges, right? Push comes to shove here, and they need to know what your finances are, at least as far as how much you can afford to pay. Kids will assume that they can go to any school they want to, and you're going to pay for the whole thing. That's what they're going to assume, because why wouldn't they? So you need to say to them, this is what we have for college for you. And this year, this is, from what I'm hearing, a very big topic of discussion, because a lot of people's college savings plans are down. The question is, gee, we thought we had X amount saved for college, but we have far less. So how are we going to adjust this? But certainly looking ahead, and I would recommend this even if the financial situation were better, to talk with your kids ahead of time. What is realistic for your family? Are you able and willing to pay for a state university, a private college? I've often recommended going to community college for a couple of years and then applying to the four-year school. And a lot of parents didn't want to do that because they'd rather have their kids go right into a four-year school, and I can certainly appreciate that. But if you're talking about a financial situation where especially the family is crunched, or maybe the kids just aren't ready for school yet, that happens a lot, and they're not ready to go away, or you're not really sure how they're going to handle it on their own, this is a good financial situation for you. I mean, you're going to be spending less money if you go to community college for a couple of years. You'll be able to see how the kids handle it. And then very often, it's easier to get into the four-year school of your choice if you go in as a transfer student and you've proven that you have compiled a good track record at the two-year college where you started.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teaching teens to manage their money. For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Janet Bodner of Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine about teaching teens to manage their money.
Which brings up the whole business of kids having college loans, and they get out with their undergraduate degree and they've got a gazillion dollars in loans. Mm-hmm. Then what?
If it's a student loan where you're expecting the kids to pay the money back, what field do they want to go into? What kind of a salary are they going to be making? And how much debt can they reasonably cover? People apparently do not do that calculation. And you can do that. There are calculators online. Say your child wants to be an elementary school teacher. You can look up what the salary is for elementary school teachers starting out. And then if you say, okay, I'm going to spend X percent on my student loans as an interest rate on the loan, and I want to spend 10% of my income on debt service on these loans. So how much can I reasonably expect to borrow now? There are little calculators that let you do this. And I think that this is a great thing for families to do because you can see it makes sense to borrow X amount of money. And if you say, gee, my kids are going to have to borrow way more than that if they go to X school, then maybe it doesn't make sense for them to borrow. Or maybe it doesn't make sense for them to go to a really expensive school if they're going to go into a field that's not going to pay a huge salary. I mean, you really do have to make those financial calculations.
Of course. And then most kids going into undergraduate school don't know what they're going to be. They go in as art majors and graduate as chemistry majors, or the reverse. I mean, so how do you figure out how to do this?
I think just to have some idea of the order of magnitude that you're talking about here. So if you know that a child is going to be taking on, let's say, $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 worth of student loans, that's an enormous amount of money. If you're going to borrow for college, borrow cheap, right? You want to borrow the least expensive money that you possibly can. Now, those would be government-subsidized loans for college. The main loans would be Perkins loans. The interest rate is very low. It's around 5% or so, but you do have to demonstrate a pretty significant financial need in order to get those loans. But beyond those loans, anybody can borrow these government Stafford loans, and those carry a fixed rate of 6.8% or less. If you demonstrate financial need, you can get them for less than 6.8%. But any student, regardless of financial need, can borrow at 6.8%, which is, you know, a pretty good rate of interest. And then if you, the parent, would like to borrow. Now, the Stafford loans are student loans, but if you, the parent, would like to borrow money or are willing to borrow money, there are government loans called PLUS loans. Parent Loans for Undergraduate Students was the name. I think they may have changed the name of the program, but that's the acronym. Parents can borrow at 8.5% fixed. So that's not a bad rate of interest for a long-term student loan. You can also get certainly a home equity loan, and a lot of parents do this as well. Those rates are lower right now, but it's often harder to get a home equity loan in the current market given what the financial situation is. Also, home equity loans do tend to be variable rate loans. So if interest rates were to go up in the future, the interest would go up as well. The government loans at the moment are fixed rate loans, so at least you would know what your borrowing costs would be.
Well, speaking about loans and difficult times, in these times of belt tightening and financial nail biting and so forth, is there anything that you would say to parents in terms of talking about money to their kids besides, nah?
You have to be fairly upfront with your kids, and we're talking about teenagers today. And as I said before, you can certainly share a lot more information with them than you can with younger kids. But parents of kids of all ages need to be aware that their kids are picking up on what's going on in the world. So even if you are secure in your own job, even if you haven't lost a lot of money in your college fund, they're hearing this on the news. They're hearing it from their friends. They may have friends whose parents have experienced layoffs. So this is all percolating. It may even be a good idea for you to ask them, if they don't bring it up, what do you make of all this? Have you been watching the headlines? Did you talk about this in school? Just to see where they are. And you might get a good conversation going. And again, if you are in a serious situation, maybe you have lost your job, they know. The challenge for parents is that kids of all ages do expect their parents to be reassuring. In front of your kids, you have to share with them a certain amount of information, certainly if your own finances have been affected. But you also want to be reassuring to them. What they really want to know, are we going to have food on the table? Is there going to be a roof over our head? Which, in the case of foreclosure, you know, may not even be the case, in the sense that they'll have a roof over their heads, but it may be a different roof if they move to, you know, a less expensive home or to an apartment or something. But to share with them, to be reassuring to them, and to have a plan, I think this is really important. Whatever your own family situation is, if you have some difficulties, you should have a plan. So you're not just going to be telling them, oh my gosh, I lost my job, I don't know what I'm going to do, because they can't deal with that. They can't really help, and they'll feel guilty, they'll feel worried, and there's not a lot they can do about it. But if you say to them, I lost my job, worst case, let's say, this is what I'm going to do. I'll be eligible for unemployment benefits for a certain amount of time. I'm going to be networking, you know, introduce that word to them and, you know, tell them what it means. You know, I'm going to be going to other contacts that I've made throughout my work, looking for additional jobs. In the meantime, your mother or your father is going to go out and work, or is going to bump up his hours or her hours, or, you know, whatever plan you have in order to, or I'm going to go out and get a part-time job while I'm looking for a full-time work, or, you know, whatever your plan is. And I think that that helps you too, because you're in this situation and you're worried about this and you're thinking, gosh, what am I going to do? If you can tell the kids, this is what I'm planning to do, then I think it's helpful for you as well. But you do have to broach the subject always in an age-appropriate way.
It's interesting. We all want our children to succeed. We all want our children to have good things happen. But I always feel like the teachable moments and the important times are to show kids how to get through the bad times. We know they're going to happen, whatever the subject. And if we can model how to deal with bad times, it's a great gift to our kids, I think.
Oh, I think it is, Sandy. I have great faith in the children of America, including the teenagers of America. You know, they really do rise to the occasion. I get this question a lot. Oh, aren't these kids spoiled if the parents nowadays tell them, we can't afford to buy you the iPhone or the iPod? Aren't they going to push back and say, well, what do you mean you can't afford it? If you have indulged these kids from the age of 2, it's going to be hard for them to hear the word no. But at some point in their lives, they need to hear it. Why not now? And if you tell them the family needs help here, we're all going to have to pull together. I have great faith that the teenagers of America will do that.
And kids, like grown-ups, like to be needed.
Oh, yes.
And if there's something that they can do,
yes,
that's a direct result, that's something I would think that would be helpful also.
That is a really good point. Yes, they could go out and ramp up their babysitting work or their lawn mowing or whatever. I mean, earn some money, you know.
Or take over some more chores if the parents have to have longer hours.
That's right, exactly. And ask them, what can I do to help mom? What can I do to help dad? And dad and mom, come up with something for them. Make it into a good family experience if you can.
Well, it's unfortunate that we're running out of time, but before we close, are there resources that you would suggest for parents who want to learn more on this subject?
Well, I'd love for them to read Raising Money Smart Kids, which is my book on the subject. And I also do write the Money Smart Kids column on the Kiplinger website, www.kiplinger.com, and that's KIPLINGER.com. We have a whole college section on the site. We also have a free video on student loans, which is called Borrow Smart. Plus, we have a lot of other good information on family finances.
Well, I can't think of a better resource than you have been for us. So, Janet Bodner, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Sandy.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Janet Bodner's book, Raising Money Smart Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 393 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice as a podcast. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're so glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.